Welcome to Drinking Bros, presented by GhostBed.com. Sit back, relax, and grab a fucking drink.
Stop shuffling through life like a zombie. You're bumming everybody out. Grab a CardoMax Energy Intensifier and wake up. Owned and operated by former Navy SEAL Sean Mattson, CardoMax's Energy Intensifier will help you power through your workouts and dead afternoons with vitamins B3, B6, B12, caffeine, and BCAAs. Use the promo code DB to get 30% off your next four orders at CardoMax.com. That's CardoMax.com, helping you achieve your max. Yeah! Welcome to Drinking Bros, kids. Got another hot Wednesday afternoon show for you today. Look, these guys were in front of my face, inside my ears, and living inside my heart for years and years on HBO. Now they have their very own podcast that is not bigger than ours. I want you guys to know that, okay? There's no fucking around, Doug and Kevin. It is not bigger than ours yet. So therefore, we're going to say this. We got the creator of Entourage, Doug Allen, on the show, and one of the stars, Kevin Dillon. Welcome to the show, boys.
Thanks for having us.
What's up, fellas?
Howdy.
Howdy, howdy, howdy. First and foremost, what made you decide to start the podcast? Was it because Showtime took billions from you or no?
I need to clear up the Showtime billions. All I said, this wasn't plagiarism. I hired those guys to write a hedge fund show. I then put them together with the other guy they created it with, and I never heard back from them. So anyway, that was also Wahlberg and Levinson were also producers on that show. But anyway.
Who we love, by the way.
Well, we love them? Of course we love them, but that is
we want the reboot.
but we're not talking about that. We're talking about the guys who created billions. Anyway, it's not they wrote their own shit. If people like the show, God bless them. I've never seen it. All I'm saying is I hired them, they got paid, and then they went and made a hedge fund show without me. So God bless them. But anyway, we started a podcast because COVID was happening. Mm-hmm. I was about to leave to London to do this new show I was working on, and the world ended, and Kevin Connolly was starting a podcast company, and he asked us to come in. And to be honest with you, I don't think either of us had any idea what it was going to be, but we've had so much fun that we've kept it going. So.
Yeah, and it's one of those things where you guys were so entertaining as real-life people, not just in the show, that it works. Whereas a lot of these people, celebrity-wise, are just like, oh, shit, it's COVID. I've got to do a podcast. And then you listen to them. Most of them faded after like 6 or 7 months, where you were just like, all right, it's Lena Dunham. We get it, okay? and now you just...
I haven't listened to her, so I can't comment on it. But yeah, we have such a good time because we really are. We're friends and brothers. We fight. We, you know, we talk about everything that's going on in our lives. So.
You guys got to get a deal with Triller so you can put the fight on Showtime or some shit, right?
Yeah.
Or I guess Showtime's stolen enough from you. Maybe just somewhere else.
Somebody.
Just do bump fights. Fight in the parking lot and have somebody film it.
It would be me against both of them. Make it fair.
Yeah, exactly. Kevin,
maybe I'd have to get a little drunk to really give him a chance.
Kevin, what are you working on right now specifically? I know you can only hang for about 15 today. What are you working on? And can your producer throw a little camera on you so we can see that
I
face?
I got a tea time in a little while, so I'm working on that. But I got a bunch of movies coming out.
Wait, is Dillon not on camera?
He's not on camera. Tell your producer to throw to him. Let's see his beautiful face out there.
I don't understand. I see him on my
phone.
Maybe you need to do that on our
side. How dare you?
I don't understand.
This is an outrage. I'm going to talk to my manager.
Now, I see him on my iPad, so I don't understand why you guys
I think it's
him.
On our side.
It's the way the mic is set up. It clicks over to the other side. That's going to happen from time to time. You know, the technology's new. It's raw. Again, not as big as our show. Mm. So it's just growing
right
pains.
Now. Well, look at the set you guys have. I mean, look at us. I have
a waste of makeup.
Yeah, our set. Look, we do want to clarify something about our set. Okay, so there is some signed OJ Simpson memorabilia. There's a helmet, and there is a jersey. We like both of those were signed before he killed anyone. So we want to know, we got to get that out there first and foremost. Behind me is a signed Hulk Hogan belt. from when he won the title. It was before he said the N-word during his sex tape. So as long as that's out there, we're good to go.
Did he? I put Dylan on Entourage before he killed anyone also. So like, timing is everything.
I can kill someone at any moment.
And now he hasn't stopped killing for years.
No,
And maybe that's what his producer's trying to do. He's trying to stop Dylan from killing people.
I'm going to kill the producer if they don't give
you
my close-up.
I agree.
Put me on film.
The fact that you're not on film is disappointing, but...
Dan, can you click view in the top right-hand corner? Yeah,
look at this guy coming in, too. You know what? I see him on, but...
There he is.
There we go.
Let's walk into Con.
Now we got him. Now we got him. He's on. Who walked in? You're good. We got him now.
That was Kevin Conley.
You did have him? Because now we got him all here.
Look at that.
Double click on their faces.
Where's my close-up? We got Kevin Connolly in here.
What's up, fellas?
How are you? Welcome to Drinking Bros. We got a couple of Kevins. Look, if we shave Dylan's head... Would you star as Brian Laundrie in a Lifetime movie? Yes or no?
But who plays Dog the Bounty Hunter, though?
You could be Brian Laundrie.
Yeah, go back there, Kev, because they can see you now. Kevin
there you go.
Dillon would be great. He, you know what's so versatile about Kevin Dillon? He could be Brian Laundrie. He could also be Lyle Menendez, easily.
I look like Tom Brady with my head shaved. I'm not even kidding.
Yeah, switch over to Kevin's for a minute.
I did a movie where I played Jack Warner. Of Warner Brothers. It's the Reagan movie with Dennis Quaid as Ronald Reagan.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
And I swear to God, I do look like Tom Brady. Some people say John Travolta.
Well, look, if they do, they do. I wouldn't say that. Is Kevin Sorbo in that movie as well, by the way?
No.
He's not in the Reagan movie. Are you sure?
Not that I know.
Okay.
Can you guys see this?
I checked the call sheet there. What do you got there?
Can't see this.
Oh, my God.
Is this working?
I don't see it.
Oh, wow.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
He's got those bright baby blues. Look at that.
Yeah. He might be related.
Maybe, but look.
My name is Brady. My middle name is Brady. It's my mom's maiden name.
What kind of photoshopping was done there?
We're both great athletes. I think I got a little edge on them.
So what else, guys? Talk to us.
Again, with the bald head, I'm going to say Laundrie. And we need a Dog the Bounty Hunter on that side. Everybody's asking about the reboot of Entourage. I don't know why it couldn't happen now, in particular with everything that's going on in Hollywood, especially for a character like Ari or Jeremy Piven. To go scorched earth on everything that's going on in Hollywood right now would be a great idea. I just think a lot of people in Hollywood are afraid to do that type of comedy right now. What have they told you from the inside? They've rebooted everything, for Christ's sakes.
I mean, you know, the new CEO of HBO, Discovery, you know, he got on CNBC and said, you know, we have the greatest IP in the world, which is Sopranos, Entourage, Sex and the City. So, you know, he feels good about it. And it really is. It's about having whoever's at the top being willing to go do it. And again, it offends me to even put us in the wheelhouse of offensive stuff. I'm watching Squid Games, which I like, where, you know, that's really geared to children and they're murdering hundreds of people an episode. So yeah. I don't know. It's just, it's weird what people think about, but I think the interesting thing about A, our podcast, and B, people revisiting Entourage, I think they're really going, you know what? I think somebody exaggerated this weirdness about how bad it was. It's not that sexual. It's not that vulgar. And it really is about friendship and family and loyalty. So I think there will be a chance to reboot it at some point. And Dylan's more excited about that than I am.
I've been putting the screws to Doug Allen for so long now. Start writing, bro.
Yeah, I would say this. As far as like you doing a show, I would like to see you in Vikings. And again, it's just to hear the victory at the top of the ship, obviously.
You want a victory?
Yeah.
Why don't you say so, bro?
Give us a victory.
Dude, it would be great, man. It would be great to put on that old Viking Quest outfit again. Just that show was so fun.
It was a blast. And look, I'm sure everybody wants to talk to you about it, but we want to hear some crazier stories. I want to know some of your old gambling stories with Don Johnson and those guys down at the track. Okay, mutual friend of ours, Chris Koloskis, used to roll out with you guys.
Yeah, Chris, he's my boy.
He was my college roommate at Ohio State. Yes. He would tell me the craziest stories ever.
Appearances.
Tons. He would tell me all the crazy stories. I won't say them all on air in case you're still married, but
No, I am not. Had a lot to do with Chris and those club appearances. So So Chris used to set up these club appearances, and we would have a great time.
Well,
it's along with Don Johnson and others.
It's wild because, you know, at the time, dude, they were booking them out for, you know, I'm not going to say what your quote was or anything like that, but like they literally paid you to go to a club for 4 hours. They would set essentially an egg timer in front of you on the table and say, all right, great. When this 4 hours is up, you can leave. You would get bottle service. It was the hottest women in America, and it was the greatest gig of all time. And I was like, what's the problem here?
By the way, he's still got that gig. They just got rid of the egg timer. He's got to stay all night now.
The price is the same.
Yeah.
The clubs aren't open anymore.
But, yeah, no shit.
Yeah, I mean, it was a great gig. And I do have to say, it was a lot of work, though. I mean, a lot of photographs, a lot of autographs, that kind of thing. But as far as work goes, it's about as good as guess.
Yeah. One would imagine. By the way, I got to meet the real life turtle in real life. He's no longer with us. But did you guys get to read all the original members when you guys were still going?
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, there wasn't really that original member. I mean, I know who you're talking about, but Jerry was really kind of based on a couple of different people and kind of brought obviously the old thing to it. But yeah, of course, we knew him. And there's been a couple of guys were a couple of guys circling around Mark.
Plays drama, who's kind of the drama character.
But there were a couple of guys circling around Mark's crew who actually have passed on. So, but Turtle was definitely a combination of a bunch of people.
Okay. Cause the reason I said it is, I had dinner with Mark, a long time ago. It was like 06. And I was telling the story to my producer before we came on. It was four of us at a dinner. It was his girlfriend, who is now his current wife, was there. And, I was about to do a movie with, Tara Reid. And that was before like the meltdown and all that other shit. She was coming off the, you know, the American Pie series, and it was massive. And, God bless her. She helped get the film financed. And I don't have a bad word to say about her. When I went up to use the bathroom and I came back, one of Mark's buddies, who I thought the turtle character was based off of, was standing in front of the table in a Boston Celtics jersey in the middle of this nice restaurant. Was like, yo, nobody gets this close to Mark. Nobody gets this close to Mark. And I was like, hey, dude, I'm sitting at the table. There's only four of us. Like, what the fuck are you doing? And his girlfriend, again, now wife, had kind of said, Mark, do we have to bring these people out with you everywhere we go? And it was real.
Well, that's why, though, the show is so different than the real life crew. Mark's real crew, which is a much bigger group, was a lot tougher. No offense, Bill. It was a lot tougher, edgier group, and a lot of the characteristics of the group kind of melded towards the friendships that I had in high school. And when we cast Adrian, who was obviously a different type than Mark, it became a softer, kind of nicer crew than some of the real guys, you know?
Yeah, because a homeboy who showed up at the table, like it looks like House of Pain. And he looked like he could slit my throat, and he had like maybe four or five knives on him somewhere other than his sleeves, because it was a full jersey, no sleeves underneath, and he didn't give a shit.
Yeah. By the way, there's a whole other show we could have done with that crew. You know, there's a whole different tone that it could have been. But
dude, could you imagine that one? Just a bunch of robberies, and it would have been like The White Wire at the time.
Somebody should make. So they made that documentary, or not documentary. They made that kind of biopic series with Cuba Gooding Jr. about OJ and the trial and everything. I want to see the series about OJ in Miami, where he's doing cocaine and banging whores and robbing people.
Yeah.
That's way more entertaining than some bullshit trial that the government wasted $25 million on.
I agree.
You know what I mean?
I like that.
Yeah. Sounds like a Disney Plus movie. Yeah. For
sure. And they're looking for that. You know, throw a couple trans in there and you're good to go these days.
Yeah, you can do what you want.
Kevin, your brother, I got to meet him several times over the years. Was he a big part in helping you get ready for Entourage and all that stuff?
No, not really. No. You know, he had his own career going on. I had to get ready all by myself. But yeah, I mean, I had the, you know, I grew up with an older brother. So I know a brother who is more famous. So I kind of know what it's like to go through that. And that helped. Yeah, I think all that stuff helped me play that character.
The pussy that guy used to pull, by the way, was absolute insanity. I mean, I've never seen anything like it in real life. If there was a show dedicated to that, it was crazy. I mean,
good looking guy.
Yeah.
Dude. I mean, you know, when we were growing up, look, we all, you know, Flamingo Kid had a big influence on Entourage. So it's weird. Kevin Dillon just happened to come in for the movie, but Matt Dillon was definitely kind of that, you know, one of those star inspirations for someone we could surround it with. And we were lucky enough to find Kevin, who, even though he had done comedy before, I don't think anyone realized just how funny and good he was, you know?
Yeah.
Well, your first big movie was Platoon, right? If I'm not mistaken. So that's not exactly a comedy role.
I did a couple movies before Platoon, and one of them was a comedy. It was called Heaven Help Us.
Okay.
About Catholic school in 1965. It was a very funny movie.
Yeah, I'll get a chance. I'll definitely check that out.
Dan's military. So like Platoon is one of the biggest movies.
Yeah, Oliver Stone. I was gonna ask you about it just out of curiosity. Oliver Stone's kid was on our show last week. He's an interesting guy. But Stone was
Sean. Sean.
Yeah, Sean. He's a good dude.
Sean, I remember him when he was a kid.
Yeah.
I remember when he was a baby.
Yeah, he was in that movie, right? But he was in some of the other
ones. He was born in like 86.
Yeah. Yeah. So he was a
tiny little baby when I met him.
It's you don't really see those movies coming out right now that challenge authority too much. Like where are the platoons, where are the V for Vendettas? You think you would expect that kind of shit right now in the kind of culture, because entertainment is a reflection of society typically, right? And I haven't seen that. I know there's a lot of stuff going on with the theater or with the production houses and things like that, and people that want to piss people off and challenge authority and stuff. But didn't used to be the job of entertainment? It wasn't always about entertainment. I mean, think about the first entertainer any of us can probably identify as Shakespeare, right? The first guy that's writing and putting on plays in front of live audiences and shit like that. He was, everything he wrote was subversive against the English government. Everything. So where is that now? I think that's almost entertainment's role in society, is to challenge.
Yeah, I mean, I think people exaggerate how much, you know, cancel culture is changed, because this is nothing new. I mean, Andrew Dice Clay, who was on Entourage, was canceled 30 years ago. Lenny Bruce before that. So this is not new stuff, and artists will find their way. We see what's going on with Chappelle right now, which, again, the world is different now. If Chappelle's thing happened 10 years ago, maybe it would have been a problem, but it's not now. So there are the, you know, Barstool and Joe Rogan's that can, you know, that can speak freely and say what they want. And I think artists will be doing that too. There's obviously been less stuff coming out with all the stuff that stopped from COVID, but I think it's highly exaggerated how much people are terrified to do anything. You just have to still be artists and be good and be intelligent and say something useful, you know? And I don't think that's ever going to go away in this country.
But the problem is,
I got to run because tea time. I'm so sorry. I didn't know I was doing that. This was unplanned for me.
Of course. Yeah. We were interviewing Doug today and you popped in. You stole some of his limelight. That's fine. That's what you do.
That's
Kevin.
What I want.
I understand. But we appreciate you being here. Kevin, where can they find your next movie?
Well, I don't know which one's coming out, but I got like five movies coming out. But I think it's probably going to be the Reagan movie and hopefully in theaters. I don't know how they're going to release it, but it's going to be good. I think it's going to be really good.
But more importantly, find them on Victory the Podcast.
Right? Yeah, Victory the Podcast, and they'll give you all the details on the movie Reagan. Thanks for being here with us, Kevin. Doug, I think the problem is with Hollywood is that, you know, what Dan was saying is you just can't get it passed through the well,
I mean,
corporate
ladder. It takes money to get any of these films made.
Yeah,
it's interesting to me that The Big Short got made, to be honest. Especially with the cast and crew that they had to fucking spend money on to get that made, because that movie calls out the entire financial industry.
But you have to get Christian Bale in it to get it financed, right?
Yeah, but that's anything. It's not because it's got some message behind it. I mean, look at The Wolf of Wall Street. The Wolf of Wall Street is, you know, which I love, it's a genius movie, but it's such a glorification of bad male behavior. And that was actually really well received critically because, you know, it's that one they've decided, whoever they is, that's art, whereas some other things they decide aren't, you know. And same thing with Chappelle now. There's some people who are offended by what he says, but, you know, anyone who knows comedy knows what Eddie Murphy was saying 30 years ago. And, you know, comedy, art, it pushes the culture and usually leads it. And movies have always been controlled by a certain amount of gatekeepers who get to decide what is going to be on and what's not. But the beauty of the world right now, as you guys know, you can be heard. You can go do your podcast.
Oh, yeah.
You can go do many other ways to get the word out of what you want to do. And if it's interesting, people will follow, you know?
Yeah,
it's
true.
Hang on. It's interesting you brought up Wolf of Wall Street, because that movie was actually independently financed. So the studio didn't want to make that movie. And then Warner Brothers ended up buying it after the fact. And that was a big boy budget. You know, behind
the
scenes.
They didn't want to make it at that budget, because that is such a crazy budget, even for a Scorsese movie. It actually turned out to be his most successful financial movie.
Yep.
And it was also financed by a guy ripping off the Malaysian people for, you know,
$3.5 billion. Yeah, $3.5 billion.
But I, you know, if Scorsese wanted to make that movie for $30 million, he could have made it in 5 minutes. But when you want to make $150 million movies, it just, it's a business. And they're going to take every look at every angle. And of course, there's a moment right now where people might be more precious about a particular subject or not, but the right people can get it going. And then again, there always is the independent avenues and the fact that people can speak in many different forums now, you know?
So what's the challenge like for you right now? Is there projects that you're just fighting upstream when you go into these pitch meetings, at HBO or any of the other networks where you're like, God damn it, man, I know this is great. I know this will crush if it just got out to the world. However, somebody that the higher ups that be up there are like, man, I don't know, this is a little too aggressive or, you know.
I mean, you know, it's always a battle here. There's like 10 people in the entire business, you know, Spielberg, maybe Wahlberg, that can go do whatever they want, whenever they want. The rest of us, it always is a grind, and it's not necessarily because the material is whatever it is. I mean, Entourage was really critically acclaimed when it came out, but that was a grind getting that on HBO then. I mean, it was, but it wasn't because anyone thought the language was foul or any of that stuff. It was just, you know, there's someone in charge that is making a decision to spend millions of dollars. And if they don't think it's going to bring back millions of dollars, it's their job to stop it. Unfortunately, you know, that is part of the business. But like I said, I think it's such a great time where people can make their own stuff, distribute it in different ways, and, you know, build their own careers. So the challenges for me are always the same. Now, I've, you know, even, you know, after Entourage, I kind of checked out really wanting to grind and write like I did for 20 years prior to that. So I'm very happy with being able to do the podcast. I'm able to say what I want, even though, you know, I'm dealing with right now, Instagram suspended me last week. I'm not even sure why. So, you know, we all know that there is this thing in the culture where there are places where you have to be careful what you say. And, you know, as I told all my friends, Instagram is a private company. They do have the right to tell you what to say or not. The problem that I have is they don't do it even-handedly. And you've got, you know, some fucking, you know, guy railing on about how Israel is a genocidal state. And me, I told someone his girlfriend was ugly and they kicked me off Instagram. So, you know, it's different stuff that, you know, that I think is the problem, that there is no real clear definition of what the line is, you know?
Right. Well, that's because we're leaving the public discourse and its contents up to the whims of people who have a financial interest in a certain angle or another. That's saying that Instagram has the right. Technically, it's true. They're a private company, but so is the telephone company, and they're not allowed to decide who they will and won't sell to or allowed to communicate based on what their political opinions are, or whether or not they think the earth is flat, like Kyrie Irving, for example.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. But like the internet is going over the public airwaves, and you know, the networks used to have, I mean, they still do, standards and practices where there were certain things you could not do, but I think everyone understood what you couldn't do. You couldn't put a naked person on ABC, you know, you couldn't say the F word on ABC. So I just think the problem is we know what's on Instagram. There's live murders that stay up there for days. There's people who threaten people. I get stuff all day and all night. And I hit the report button when someone tells me I should burn in an oven or something. And I get back from Instagram sometimes. We checked out your report and decided it didn't go against community guidelines. So that's really where the problem is. Because if they say you can't curse on Instagram, okay, then you know you can't curse on Instagram, and it's not that big of a deal. But that's very different than, you know, if someone was going to come in on these podcasts and tell us that we cannot say whatever we want to say, that would be a different issue. But I think the private companies have that right. They just need to make it clear what the rules are, you know?
Yeah, no, I completely agree. And, you know, for me as a comedian, like that's why I pivoted out of movies and TV shows into podcasts about 6 years ago. Was it was getting harder and harder to get comedies made. It was getting harder and harder to get them sold. And you needed like 9 names attached to it.
Yeah.
And then if somebody came along that had a better deal or was more famous, they could push you out of your own project and then just take it from you. That's why I brought up Billions at the top of the show. Something similar happened to me at IFC in a Will Ferrell show that they had taken. And I went in with the lawyers and I said, look, we've already been working on the show. It was sold and everything else. And it's not about the money. And they were like, great. If it's not about the money, how about we just fire all the executives? And I said, yeah. I will take that. And that's what they did. IFC wiped them out.
Thanks to it. And again, for the Billions thing, no one was bigger or more famous or took. What that was just a shady thing. You know, morally, when someone brings you an idea, when someone connects you with other pieces of it, You
100%.
They're a producer. Again, I just to be clear, I didn't write it. They didn't plagiarize. They didn't steal. Anyone could go make a show about hedge funds. That's I don't own the world of that. But specifically this one, I got them paid to write one or whatever. But as far as names go, nothing has changed with that. Like bigger names are going to get to do bigger things for one reason. And I think we all think that's a good thing. This is a capitalistic society and people want to make money. While you and I may just want to be funny as we can be, and hopefully people like that. You know, years ago, comedies became harder to sell because the bigger markets were foreign and they didn't care about the comedies. Yeah. They cared about the action movies and they cared about the big explosions and stuff. So again, I get it. I don't begrudge any of that. I begrudge scumbags who go behind your back and do stuff. I begrudge people who try to censor you once it's out there. I really begrudge revisionist history. Again, you know, Entourage was President Obama's favorite show and the New York Times wrote it was the best show on TV. And somehow, some way, it became this poster child for stuff that, as I said, it's not even close to some of the stuff you see in The Wolf of Wall Street. It's not even close to some of the stuff you see on mainstream television, stuff like The OC, which was a show I liked also. But we weren't even that sexual. We weren't even that vulgar. So for some people who are offended by some of the language, it's just, you know, that I don't have the patience for.
No, that's nonsense. I mean, we do a lot of that. I think more so than just the cancel culture is weakness at the corporate level for the most part, just allowing it to happen. But the mob mentality towards moving the goalpost, I think, is a much more problematic situation that we have right now. You're judging a game that was played 10 to 30 years ago on today's rules. That's not how anything in life has ever worked. Good for Dave for, I mean, he's become even richer just explaining that in a very funny way. And of course it's going to piss off the people that are doing it. Like if you come into, if you criticize anybody for what they're doing, they're going to get mad. Even if they're right for doing it, they're going to get pissed off about it. Even if they're wrong for doing it, they're going to get pissed off. And those people are pissed off because they've been fucking around doing stupid shit, not applying the principle of charity and taking him at the best possible. Obviously, he is a good man, right? Yep. Clearly. You could tell by the way he spends his fucking time that he's a good man. So expect that he's saying comes from a good place.
That's such an important thing. I mean, Chappelle obviously is so brilliant and is able to actually give his points that are eloquent and smart if you actually listen to what he's saying. But you know, it's the biggest thing I see is, which it's always been this way with like violence, like The Sopranos, which I love, let me be crystal clear, because somehow you get taken out of context. I love The Sopranos, but that's a show where like a guy, domestic violence and murders his wife and stuff, and people talk about that just because some people consider it better art than something like Entourage. Just like Wolf of Wall Street, people can make, they can say or not, whatever, that's fine. But you have to look at what the intent of it is. And the intent is to, at least for Entourage, was to entertain. And the message behind it was really to care about your friends and family more than anybody else. And if everybody, you know, really like got to that point where they did take care of their friends and family at the least, and then started moving out from there, I think we'd all be better off, you know?
Do you think that's the disparate reaction to that? I mean, it could just be because of the time we're in right now, but I think maybe alien violence and mob violence and shit like that has been something that has been acceptable forever. Nobody's ever really complained about that except for like the Italian whatever the fuck defamation league, which was started by Lucky Luciano, by the way. A fucking mobster, I think. Or no, it was started by one of the heads of the crime families, actually. Anyways, except for them, that's been pretty accepted. I think it's because people can't imagine themselves in that character. Like, maybe from some kind of aspirational tough guy shit, they would want to do some shady shit like that or whatever the fuck, but they can't imagine themselves being in the life. And
yeah,
if somebody needs you to go kill somebody, it's just a foregone conclusion that you go do it. But for Entourage, I could see myself hanging out with my friends and doing fucked up shit and having relationships with people and blah, 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 and all the pitfalls and bad decisions that come with that. And people think, this is my least favorite thing about the way people perceive whatever form of art it is. Just because I put it in front of you doesn't mean I approve of it. I'm putting it in front of you because it is a reflection of reality. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and also Entourage, which again, I don't want to spend too much time trying to build it up, or as you can judge it for what it is, but we were so realistic that everybody in this town at the time loved it and wanted to be on it. We had, I don't even know, 10 Academy Award-winning directors come on the show, writers, athletes, and everybody. So we were, you know, we were speaking to the culture and we were reflecting exactly what it was. But again, without trying to apologize, because I never will, but you know, they were good guys on that show. And Ari may have had a big mouth. There was a real Ari who had a bigger mouth in real life.
He still
does.
The
character that I wrote, who had a big mouth, was still a good family man and who loved his gay assistant, who he would not speak to that way today because it just is no longer acceptable. And I think we all understand that. But either way, it has nothing to do with me. I wrote something that they were characters portraying something else. So you can hate the character, but if you don't hate Tony Soprano, who like beat the shit out of his son's, you know, best friend's father, you know, I don't know what to say.
Well, it's the anti-hero, right? It's a classic part of American cinema. It's the, frankly, my dear, I don't give a damn, but there's some kind of unspoken connection between the two. It is a staple of
right, but I don't even think Ari was an anti-hero. Ari was a person that people liked, that people are like, I want to be like that. I want to make things happen like that. And again, if we ever did do a reboot, he would evolve to understand why maybe words are so harmful. And again, that's not meaning you're soft. You're not soft because you don't abuse people for their sexuality or for their race. But we know that he was not intending to do that. He was playing shtick, essentially. And I mean the character. He was basically going over the top for whatever purpose he wanted, you know?
Doug, you got a podcast. You know we got some sponsors that put this shit wagon on the air. If you'll indulge me, I will read them. First and foremost is GhostBed.com/Drinking Bros. He's shaking his head. He said no. He said, don't do the sponsors. I can't, Doug. I'm sorry. I've got to read the sponsors, all right? 40% off the bundle packages at ghostbed.com/drinking bros. Sleep so good, it's scary. This is the Ghost Bed's favorite time of year here. It's Halloween. It's time for you to get a new bedroom set. That bundle package includes the adjustable base. So you got to get the adjustable base, the mattress, and then you can add whatever else you want to it. Pillows, sheets, pillow toppers. They've even got extra cooling stuffing for the pillows as well if you're into that. I love all of the things there. I've got one in every single room of my house. If you just want a mattress or an individual item, type in the promo code Drinking Bros at checkout for 30% off. And when you go down to the bottom of the page, it's going to ask you if you want to sign up for your 36-month pay-as-you-go, no-interest program if you have decent credits. And you can make a decision of whether or not you want to pay it monthly or you want to pay it all up front. Mattresses can sometimes run you a little bit of cash. This will help you with that. You can walk out of there with a whole new mattress set for about $35-$38 a month, including the bundle package if you want to. But that's your choice, okay? We don't mandate anything here. I leave it up to you. Go to ghostbed.com/drinking bros today and get yourself a new mattress. Next up, we've got expressvpn.com/drinking bros. That is expressvpn.com/drinking bros, where you can get an extra 3 months free. Expressvpn.com/drinking bros gives you extra 3 months free, and it gives you extra protection on your computer. Going online without ExpressVPN is like leaving your kids with the nearest stranger while using the restroom. Hey, can you watch Johnny? I got to dump out real quick. Most of the time, sure, it's probably fine. But you never truly know who you're trusting or if it's a kidnapper or a serial killer. Let's get dark with it, or a rapist, okay? Why does everybody need a VPN? Look, everything we do now is online. They're tracking every single movement we do, bank accounts, crypto, Coinbase, Amazon accounts, you name it. People are trying to steal from you. This protects all of your passwords, all of your bookmarks, everything you have on your computers. And when you get expressvpn.com/drinking bros, that is every device. So you can get it on your phone for mobile, you can get it on an iPad, or you can get it on your desktop or your laptop. That is up to you. Your data is valuable. Hackers can usually make up to $1,000 per person selling your personal info on the dark web. They've got an encrypted tunnel, creates a secure encrypted tunnel between you and your device and the internet. Hackers can't steal your sensitive data. Super secure, man. look, it'd take a hacker with some type of computer blue, some supercomputer, over a billion years to get past ExpressVPN's encryption. Fire up the app and click one button to get protected, and it just sits in the background of a computer. You don't even know it's there. Phones, laptops, tablets, I'm telling you, it literally covers everything. I've had this for years and years, and it's just a simple protection. So far, so good. I'd tell you if I got ripped off. Shit, I'd call them. Secure your online data today by visiting expressvpn.com/drinkingbros. That is expressvpn.com/drinkingbros. And you can get an extra 3 months free. expressvpn.com/drinkingbros. Last but not least, we talked about these guys yesterday. We'll talk about them one more time today. Felix Gray Glasses, .com/drinkingbros. D'Anthony was telling you about the blue light and the dangers of the blue lights from all of our devices, everything that we use. Again, you should have ExpressVPN behind those devices, but you can't avoid it. We need them for work. We need them for Zoom. We need them for this podcast. And if you somehow get a YouTube notification for some of these shows, thanks for that shadow ban, YouTube. You need glasses to watch it, because if you keep staring at all these shows, it's gonna hurt your eyes. I wear these every single night when I go home. It's just part of my daily routine now. The blue light glasses that started it all, these are the guys. It's Felix Gray. And when you go to the website, they have a million different frames and all that other stuff. Dan's got the sweet Malcolm X ones. I look like kind of like I've got the Superman ones, like the CW one. Not the new gay one, but the Superman. I've got the CW glasses, and I enjoy those. They filter blue light 15 times more than most of those other blue light companies. So whether you're heading back to the office, to school, or whatever, you should get a pair of felixgrayglasses.com/drinkingbros. They've got non-prescription and prescription available. Check them out now, felixgrayglasses.com/drinkingbros. That is FelixGray glasses.com/drinkingbros. Free shipping, free returns, free exchanges. FelixGrayGlasses.com/drinkingbros. Thanks, Doug.
Yeah. Shock jock, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And again, like you were saying, you were basing them on real life people. Like, that's why we used to watch the show, because I was in LA at the time, and it was like when they were like, oh yeah, call my girl Tracy at Nike. Like that's a real person. Tracy was
Tracy
the one
Gray.
Used to, yes. She used to hook us up with all of our shit from Nike. That was a real, a lot of these people were real. The locations,
yes.
Why we used to watch it every Sunday night with me and all my actor friends was, oh, hey, we go to that place. We go to Earth Cafe. We go to all these other places. Like, there was such a realistic element to it that it was like, it really wasn't that far from the truth at that time.
No. And that was the biggest thing I tried to do. I was always like, I want to be realistic before I'm funny. And as I've said before, the real Ari couldn't have been prouder of that character. And he used to tell me he was tame next to how he was. So anyway.
100%. I remember my first week in, it's ICM. I had a huge agent there. And he picked up a fucking phone book and threw it at his assistant in there. And when I was in the room, and that's the way that culture used to be back then. And the assistants...
I lost my first job when I was working at the mailroom in New Line Cinema. I was pushing my little mail cart down the thing, which I based a scene and Entourage on this. And a VP came out of her office with a hot coffee and spilled it all over me, you know, kind of burned me. And her reaction was, what the fuck were you doing there? And I remember like it was yesterday. I said, what the fuck were you doing there? And then all of a sudden it was like in a movie where everyone turned and looked at me. And I had a lead. This woman spilled hot coffee on me. I did nothing wrong. So those were things that really happened. And I've seen behavior in this town that there is nothing on Entourage that is even remotely close to some of the realistic stuff that I've seen in this town. And, you know, again, I am very happy to say, and when you listen to Victory the podcast, you really get a feeling for the love and the relationships that were going on that show behind the scenes and what it was really based on, which was friendship and loyalty, and really taking New Yorkers who looked at the town as a bunch of jerk offs and really was seeing it through their eyes. So, you know, But yeah. Anyway, everyone should check out Victor, the podcast, and Hollywood Waves, which is another podcast I'm doing with Breezy from the show All American. It was also on Empire. And, you know, we're talking about all this stuff and hopefully just in an entertaining way.
Yeah, and you are, because I actually listened to your show, by the way. Chuck Liddell was on our network, and somebody had reached out to get Chuck on the show, and I think we'd put you guys in touch. By the way, for the audience, I did talk to Chuck last night, what he has told us, and again, we'll wait for the facts on this one, but what he has told us is that he was actually the victim in this. He was the one that had lacerations and bruises and everything else. But in Los Angeles, they're taking one person to jail, and instead of his wife, he volunteered and he went to jail. That is also a statement that he put out, I believe, yesterday morning. But I talked to Chuck, and for anybody listening out there, yes, he is still on the network. We are on pause on his show and waiting till the actual facts come out, because we don't jump to conclusions like everybody else, and we'll wait and see. I know you worked with him and you hung out with him. He was on your show a few weeks ago.
Yeah, we just had Chuck on, and you know, like you said, this is where you can cause yourself problems. I can only tell you my experiences with Chuck, who could not be a nicer guy to me and to all of us and to everyone that worked with him. Obviously, I don't have a clue what went on. I hope and pray that he's okay and his wife is okay, and whoever needs the help will get it. But Chuck has been an absolute dream for me to deal with. And, you know, I hope all comes to light and we find out what exactly happens.
Same. And I wanted to reiterate that as well, because we have the same shared work experience on that. Chuck has been nothing but unbelievably lovely. Shit, if you want to even go further, he's almost a pushover into how nice he is. I mean, when we're out in public together, he's mobbed by everybody, and he'll stay to sign every last thing, take a picture, do all the stuff. And I hope the best comes out of that situation for him and his family. Yeah. As you keep doing these podcasts, are you finding it more enjoyable that you get to say what you want every single day versus passing a script up through, you know, 10 executives, like you were saying?
100%. You know, I have this show that, you know, was supposed to go in England right before the pandemic that may go again. And I spoke to producers who were interested in yesterday. And of course, we all want a show. Mm-hmm. But I like this so much more. I don't have to answer to anybody. You know, and I wake up and I feel, and again, it's not about, by the way, we're not talking about cancel culture type of stuff. Even just the process of getting any show made is extremely difficult, extremely grinding. And then to get it good, it requires so many great people to come together and a lot of luck. And we had that on Entourage. And I've had it a couple other times in my life, but this is, you know, you guys get it. The podcast doesn't cost anything, and we get to make some nice money. Now we're doing live shows around the country and stuff, which is pretty surreal and cool. But yeah, I love it. I really like the freedom of just being able to speak my mind. And again, I'm not that controversial. So, but you know, it is what it is.
Yeah. And for us, it's the same where, you know, every day there's crazier and crazier stories coming out. It lends itself to comedy every single day. And the biggest thing is, you know, as a screenwriter and all that other stuff is, you know, you write these jokes, and then by the time the movie actually gets made 2 years later or whatever it is, then you have to rewrite the entire script.
Well, the only people that have done it without a podcast are Matt Stone and Trey Parker. Somehow they've managed to be timely. I mean, I know it's like a shitty animated cartoon and stuff, but still the writing process behind the jokes and all that stuff is very impressive what they do.
It's mind-altering.
I mean, they're geniuses.
I've never seen anything like it.
They're able to turn out stuff and turn it around so fast. It's amazing. So I've never put myself on level with guys like that. So I'm happy to just have a little forum for my little space. And I'm glad I get to go work with my buddies every day. And then again, on this Hollywood Ways with a Z thing with Breezy, who I think is going to be a big star. So, you know, it's fun, and it's a great time. I started making short films when I was 22 years old. That was on my own and not waiting for anybody and not asking people what they thought and just going out and doing it. But even then, I had to walk around with a VHS tape and like head to, you know, agency office and go, would you guys look at this? And now you can put it on Instagram. I'm banned from Instagram, but most people can put it on Instagram and tag someone and actually get a response. The amount of people that I actually interact with on a daily basis that can't believe they get to talk to me, which I get to talk to people that I can't believe I get to talk to. So it's a cool time, I think, besides all of what the news does to us, which makes everybody think they hate each other's guts and everybody's trying to cancel everything. There's still going to be great art coming out and great comedy all the time. And I think the people who don't spend a lot of time kowtowing to the audience will be the ones that do things that are authentic and interesting, you know?
Yeah. And, you know, look, podcasts are the best and fastest way to get it out, where comedically at least, where it's just like, hey, dude, we're on every day. So we're on Monday through Friday, and it's whatever happens that day, congratulations. Let's go scorched earth on it. And there's basically no repercussions except for YouTube, obviously, what we have a problem with.
Yeah, I mean, if you, I've done the math. If 1% of the stuff I say is stupid, that's about 7 minutes per week of stupid shit that lives out in public forever. So you just have to, you have to be willing to accept that. And I actually think it's good. I think it's better than the ability to go back and edit, because the only way that growth happens is when you fucking know the path towards growth, right? Like, the only way I get better at playing baseball is by playing it and learning from people who have played it before me. The only way I learn how to make a film is to learn how to do it from people that have made it before, right? Yep. It's the only way you learn. Yep. So if you don't, if we continue to erase the process, we're like walking through the woods, sweeping the brush over our footsteps, and it's a real mistake, yep. Right? And I'm not talking about Confederate statues. We don't give out trophies for second place in this country, okay? Well, I guess we do now.
Yeah, but, no, we do.
We do.
But
we,
but
we
shouldn't. We shouldn't. So, yeah, we shouldn't. Unfortunately, we do. But yeah, I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about, let's just, inside of people's own lives, the ability to be wrong about something, discover that you're wrong, move to a correct position, and then discuss that process and how it happened, is completely gone from American society. You can't allow that. If you make one mistake, you're done. And I'm not talking about cancel culture. I'm just talking about, that's what people think of you forever, mm-hmm. for no fucking reason. We don't have, I'm not talking about any particular industry. I'm just talking about the American attitude towards what it means to be right about something is fucked. I mean, it's just so far off balance. It doesn't make any sense anymore.
No.
Yeah. Again, I think it's exaggerated. I think that there is like a loud mob on Twitter and then it gets out there, but I think it's exaggerated.
Well,
there's
a theory called the exhausted majority, right? That is, it's kind of like a play on the 80-20 rule, where 20% of people are making all the noise and 80% of people are just like, hey, we basically agree on most stuff except for a couple little small things here and there. Could you guys shut the fuck up, please? Because I got to go to work.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. And then, and like you, we do live shows all over the country. We have for years and years and years. And like, dude, I've never seen like racism in any of these cities, or people hating each other, screaming at each other over politics and shit in real life. You're right. I see it on Twitter. I see it through the Twitter mobs and everywhere else. I don't actually see that in real life. And most people are inherently good that I meet, that I come across. Yeah. It is very rare that I meet somebody where I'm like, man, what a real shit bag.
Well, you know what? It's just, you know, Bill Maher had this great guy on the other day, Steve Pinker, who was like talking about his book is called Rationality or something. And it was talking about how, what the media does to everybody. And it is, turn on CNN and turn on Fox News. And if you want to hear what you want to hear, you're going to hear it on either side. And they're going to rile you up in whatever element it is. But they're taking the worst scenarios of the worst situations that happened that day that most of us will really never encounter. But we start to believe that every day that's going to happen. And it's a shame. But that's how they make money. It's all, again, it's all about money. And they're telling stories and narratives on both sides that continue to get people to come back. And while now they're after Facebook, they don't do anything different. They do the same shit. And they repress the things that they don't, that doesn't work for their narrative, again, on both sides. And they amplify the stuff that works for their storyline. So it is storytelling at its finest, you know?
It is. It is. And then who decides on what gets passed through and why? You brought up Squid Game at the top of the show. Ironically, I just watched it last night. That was my first foray into it, simply because I've got two kids. I got a 3-year-old and a 7-year-old. They wanted to watch Gabby Dollhouse, which is like a huge, you know, kid show on Netflix. Right next to it was Squid Game, and it had a different thumbnail. And the thumbnail they had for it was like this happy Asian guy of like, oh man, and you're like, oh great.
Well, that's what I said. My problem again, I watched Squid Games, good show. It's marketed to kids. My friend's son, who's 11, tried to make the sugar cookies while his parents were away and has third degree burns ever since. Now, again, I am not suggesting censoring it or keeping it off the air, but it's clearly the music, everything about it feels like it's geared towards kids. And even the violence, which people are like, oh my God, the violence, to me, it plays cartoony almost. And it feels like the real audience for it is a younger generation. And that's the only problem I have with it, that it should have a warning on it. It should come clear so that parents don't end up, you know, I remember, you know, I didn't know what The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe was when my kid was like five. And I went to Tower Records right when DVDs were coming out. And I would buy whatever came out because there were only like 10 DVDs. So I saw a big lion and I just didn't even look at the box. I was working at the time and I brought it home for my son. And my son was like somewhere between 5 and 8. And he like took it out of the DVD player. I was in the other room and he comes out. He's like, Daddy, do you know what they do to the lion in this movie? Why would you let me see this? And my mistake, but that's the parent's job. And Squid Games, I see that the kids are watching this. 10-year-olds, 11-year-olds. And there are, I don't know, people's heads are getting blown off pretty continuously on this thing. So it's the same shit. It's somebody is deciding this is what we can get away with and this is what we can't. And they know what they're doing. Everything in that show, the music almost feels childlike, you know? So the colors and the games that they're playing, you know? So,
yeah. Even the first, like, and I'll, you know, not to spoil it, but the first episode, it was this huge cat, kind of looked like a friendly Hello Kitty type of cat. And then it ends up murdering, you know, 400 or 500 people, like with violent close-ups where you're just like, oh shit, these are headshots that these kids are getting killed with.
Yeah, I mean, like in film school, we used to talk about how much more effective it can be for off-camera things to happen. And that show, nothing happens off-camera. It's like, you want to see someone's head blow off? That's the first place I would tell you to look. You
know? It's almost like expositional dialogue. Like that movie Signs with Mel Gibson was so much better up until the point they showed the alien. You didn't need to see that. It was more frightening before that happened.
Yeah.
They should have never shown that.
M. Night Shyamalan made that movie and, you know, was on Entourage. But, you know, Jaws.
Yeah.
That's what was amazing about Jaws. You didn't see the shark. You were just like, oh my God, the water is so terrifying. And they put some music on that's amazing. John Williams score. And you're like, okay, I'll never go in the ocean again. But that's really the same thing I'm saying about the media. Nobody gets attacked by sharks. You are so much more likely to get killed by a coconut falling on your head than getting killed by a shark. But every time I go away, at least one person I'm with refuses to go in the ocean because they're 100% convinced that they will be eaten the second they walk in. So it's, you know, that's what the power of the media. And that's why I say it is important that people understand that power. But that being said, it should not be censored. It should just let people know what it is, and then they can choose whether they should watch it and whether their children should watch it.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think also we should pay attention. If somebody's targeting kids, typically it's programming, right? So the processed food industry did it for 100 years with corn syrup and with other bullshit. Tobacco did it with Joe Camel, obviously, and all their other shit. Booze has done it forever, and they continue to do it now. Their motivations are very clear. They want to sell their product to as many people as possible for as long as possible. Got it. It's. I don't think anybody's going to be letting their kids dress up for as Squid Game shit for Halloween, right? I mean, that just seems weird.
I bet they will.
Yeah, I'm all in with
they
you.
Will.
Yep. So
and again, that's their right and that's their choice. But it's exactly what you said. Again, to me, it's all about money, and everything we're talking about is about money, and CNN will keep pushing the same shit so people watch, and so will Fox News push their agendas. And it's the job of sane, rational people to understand that actually you can be a Democrat or a Republican and you can really be friends with the people still. It's not life or death every second of every day, and rationality has to rule at some point, you know?
Yeah, I also wonder what the narrative point of Squid Game is, right? I mean, isn't the overarching theme that rich people prey on poor people?
Yeah, that capitalism sucks and that the workers are being abused and taken over, which again, in certain instances, they are. But what's the better system? It doesn't exist and it never has. So, unfortunately, you know, everybody's got to strive and make money, and then hopefully you can help other people to the best of your ability.
I think that's something we should pay attention to, though, when schools are starting to teach kids weird shit about history and try to shape their minds to be anti this and anti that. And now we're seeing it in film as well. That seems like it's a problem.
But this isn't new.
No, certainly not.
I'm saying. This is not new. I mean, in the 70s in the South, they had books, you know, textbooks that said some slaves were happy.
Yeah, so yeah,
there
yeah,
is yeah. Oh, yeah. always a narrative coming from people who want to keep their power and want to keep their money. So I do think social justice movements have a lot of validity to them. The problem is there's a lot of people who get into the mix of that who don't have intentions of doing good. They have intentions of emboldening themselves and building power for themselves. So I think it's incumbent upon smart people to see through that. And still, that's why I say people go, the only thing I'll say is if I wrote Entourage today, not because I'm more PC, not because I'm softer, it would just be different because there's certain things that I said as a kid, which are in that show that I didn't mean harm from. They were just the way me and my boys spoke to each other. I wouldn't say them anymore. And nobody would because you just would sound out of touch with the times. And I think that is the job for everybody to evolve and everybody to grow. But there's ways to do it. And there's ways to look back on history and go, this was a time and place. And you can't judge people for how they were in 1750 because you have no idea how you would have been in that time. And we know the system is so difficult to move and how much it takes to even get the slightest change to happen. So you can't just assume that people at that time weren't trying to do good things. And that's it. You just have to look at it like,
yeah, I mean, some people make that point quite a bit, actually, that it is a harsh example, and don't read too much into it, but that it wasn't a slave uprising that ended slavery in America. It was politicians deciding that they had had enough of injustice that made it honestly, that's what happened. That doesn't make them right for doing it in the first place. It doesn't make them a savior for correcting the problem. Those are just the facts of the case, right?
So I definitely don't want to weigh in on where those situations started and ended. We know it was fucking wrong,
yeah.
But everybody who can think that they would have been born at that time and jumped in and said, I'm going to spend my entire life stopping this. We all wish we're that good of people and that strong of people and could get by. The fact is, I don't know, 600,000 people died in the Civil War. Mm. So people die for these changes often, but a lot of times they're good and things evolve and hopefully they do keep evolving. But you know, censorship is not the answer. So it is about getting people on the same page and getting people to understand that most people have good intentions. And sometimes they're misguided. Sometimes they are just plain evil. And those people, we have to figure out proper ways to deal with them. But
yeah. I'm going to give the best segue in mankind here. Speaking of slavery. Aren't you working on a Harriet Tubman movie right now? Did I read that? Are you working on a Harriet Tubman project?
That was years ago, and I sold that to HBO. I had Viola Davis attached to it, and you know, we're talking 10 years ago, and mm-hmm. a big article came out. How dare Doug Ellen be involved with something like this? You know, that was then.
Right.
So even when people considered me, you know, relatively good at the time. So, you know, but I also at the time I did The Brick with, you know, Spike Lee and John Ridley and John Boyega. That was an idea I came up with. We shot the pilot for HBO. So I have a lot of other interests that weren't just, you know, guys running around Hollywood. But that show did not go. And they did make another Harriet Tubman movie. For me, it was a very, you know, it was an amazing book that I read and I wanted to make it. I was lucky enough to get Viola Davis before she won an Oscar and an Emmy attached to that, but it didn't happen. But as I said, I have always been someone who tries to be inclusive and someone who wants to make the world a better place. That being said, Entourage was what it was because it was absolutely realistic to my experiences in life and my experiences in Hollywood.
Well, did that, so you, that series with it never got made at all?
No.
Which one? You're talking The Brick?
One. It didn't get made with Viola Davis.
The one I did did not get made. They made another one years later. The Brick, we shot a pilot, which was John Boyega before Star Wars and John Ridley before he wrote 12 Years a Slave and won an Oscar. So those were all the people that I put together to make that show. We shot the pilot at HBO in 2012, 13, and it did not go.
Yeah, I remember reading about it, and I was curious because, you know, like you said, there's been some other iterations of it. A friend of mine was on one for WGN. I think it was called The Underground. That ended up getting made, and then obviously the Harriet's pick that got nominated a few years ago ended up getting made. I didn't know if you had any involvement in those.
I had no involvement in any of them, and again, just to clarify how things work, I mean, I had a book, which was that specific book and a specific project. So nobody owes me anything if they come up with a Harriet Tubman movie. But if the guys that I brought on to do it went and did it without me, that would be the problem, morally, legally, however you want to say it.
Yeah.
What's the book, if you don't
the
mind?
The book that I had?
Yeah.
You know, now I'm embarrassed to say it's a New York Times bestseller. It was an amazing book. And Kirk, I mean, I put such a great team together. Kirk Ellis, who wrote the John Adams miniseries, won Emmys for HBO.
Oh, that's one of my favorite series ever.
Dude, he loves John Adams more than life.
He wrote it. Viola Davis was attached. And then the brick was, like I said, it was John Ridley. It was, you know, Mike Tyson was on Entourage. And he said, why don't you, you know, do something like you did with Mark Wahlberg's life for my life? And we came up with this idea again. I didn't write a word of it. John Ridley wrote an amazing script. And Spike Lee directed the pilot. Ultimately, HBO did not go forward with it. So,
well, I would love to see something. I mean, Harriet Tubman's one of the most important people in the history of this country.
Yeah, look, it's you know, there's been multiple projects made since, and that's just what I wanted to clear up. But what was one of your favorites that never got made? Because I think we all have our one favorite that it was like, God damn it. If I could die tomorrow and just get one project made, it would be this. Do you have one of those sitting on the back burner?
Well, what happened early in my career wasn't mine, but I was going to direct it. I got attached to a Will Ferrell movie called August Blowout that Will had written, and it was before... I forget what his big movie is that blew him up, but he had done Night at the Roxbury, and I just finished an independent movie that sold to a studio, and I met with Will and I met with Lorne Michaels, and they approved me as director of this movie, which was hilarious. And I saw Night at the Roxy and I was like, oh my God, this guy is one of the funniest people I've ever seen. And his salary was going to be $300,000. We had him, and the studio would not sign off on it. And within a year, I think he went to $7 million. The rest is history. And, you know, I'm not like from the beginning of my time in this business, it wasn't that I like had these passion projects, and even Entourage, which was brought to me by Mark Wahlberg, you know, I tried to make them my own. And if I came up with an idea, I wanted it to be great. But, you know, to be honest with you, the Harry Tubman movie was really important to me because it was at a time when my daughter was in the grade that I dreamt that it would be something they would show at school. And so it was more of a, like, I wanted something great to be made again that I would have had very little creative involvement. I just put all the pieces together and was hoping for the best. But, you know, if I ever made anything again, I would love to do something that really does stand the test of time and says something in a non corny way, but I don't have the desires I had to do that I did even 15 years ago. I'm very happy with where I am right now. And, you know, I'm working on this football show with Thierry Henry, and if it goes, great. And if it doesn't, you know, it doesn't.
Well, I'm an Arsenal fan, so hopefully it goes.
Yeah. It's a really cool project. So we'll see what happens. You know, Ted Lasso is a great show, but this is kind of a more gritty, dark side. Some of the stuff that Thierry dealt with in his career with racism and all this stuff, and it encompasses a lot of the stuff that I care about, which is, again, friends, family, loyalty, but also what's going on in the world and how, you know, you can say, oh, people are over exaggerating, but there is bad shit, you know. When Thierry, if he would do something wrong on the soccer field, the racism that would come at him, people would show up at his house, and you know, that stuff is crazy that it still goes on, you know.
Yeah. I know a couple of friends of mine pitched some soccer shows. They had a problem because Americans just weren't as into soccer as everyone else, and they never ended up going.
So I don't buy into any of that shit. No one was at the Hollywood when we did Entourage, you know, and right. I always said it's not Hollywood. They could be firemen. This is about these guys and their lives, and Hollywood is the backdrop. Same with this one. Obviously, Ted Lasso's opened up football, soccer to more people now, but it's the biggest sport in the world. So the markets now are so much bigger than just what America wants. So, but we'll see what happens.
Yeah. It's a complicated world because you got to navigate whoever's up there and the powers that be. Because, again, with the soccer thing, if it weren't for Ted Lasso, then now everybody wants every soccer thing there is, right? But before that, they didn't want any of that because they were like, oh, America's selling soccer.
Same thing with Entourage. Yeah. I mean, there's been 15 ripoffs of Entourage since it came on. And, you know, nobody wanted a Hollywood show. It was at that time, you know, that's before TMZ. That's before all the reality stuff. So nobody wanted that. So, you know, the good people find ways to do it. And with Ted Lasso, they did a great job and people are loving it. So it'll probably lead to more football shows. Again, the show I'm talking about is not a football show. The backdrop is football, but the really story is about this family, you know?
Yeah. Do you like American football at all?
Do I?
Yeah.
Like the NFL?
Yeah. Because you're calling soccer football here.
Yeah,
so,
So, I love the NFL. And, you know, we just had Eli Manning on our podcast. We had Andrew Whitworth on our podcast, DK Metcalf. So I love, you know, the NFL. I love all sports and American sports. And, you know, to be honest, football, I call it football because in Europe, if you call it soccer, they laugh at you. But I've never been a huge fan of soccer. Yeah. But I've really gotten into it since I started this project and really started appreciating how great of athletes these are and understanding that it's an arrogant American attitude to not get why it's the biggest thing in the world, you know. But if you ask me which I prefer, of course I prefer NFL football.
America's
you know?
The land of plenty. We want home runs and touchdowns. But when there's only going to be one goal scored in a game that's 90 minutes long, I think that's a problem for some of this microwave culture people. I love soccer and I love baseball for the same reason. Because of the intricate stuff that happens in it.
Yeah, yep. Absolutely. And you know, you had Eli on the show. Did you get a chance to watch his ESPN2 coverage with Peyton for the Monday Night Football
games? I did watch it. Yeah, I did watch it. And, Eli was supposed to be on Entourage. We ended up, Tom Brady replaced him because Eli disappeared on us, which we got to talk about. We're actually on his show, which is coming out. But he's great. And I didn't really, we always knew Peyton was funny, but Eli was awesome on the Monday Night Football thing. And he was great on the show we did with him, which I think airs on YouTube or something.
Yeah, and the reason I bring that up is Dan and I do these live watches, very similar to that. They're very successful. I think that would be a great format for you guys in your podcast to be able to watch it with Kevin, well, both Kevins, obviously, and yourself, because you have the gift of gab, my man, and that's why I enjoy the show. For real, like your outlook on life is very similar. You're a very smart guy, and I think you've taken a lot of heat over the years, which is completely unnecessary. And we greatly appreciate you being on today. Now's the point in the show we get to the Drinking Bro of the Week, which is someone who has inspired you or helped you become the person you are today. Who would you like to give the Drinking Bro of the Week to?
Drinking Bro of the Week. Wow. I am a young curmudgeon like him, but Larry David's been an inspiration for me for a long time. And he's kind of what we talked about. Larry has been able to walk that line between a genius comedy and offensive and do it brilliantly. And he's always been someone that I look to. Again, I always like to say, I am not comparing myself to Larry David. I would aspire to that. And he's someone that inspires me. I can't wait. The new season may start Sunday, actually, with her. Mm-hmm. But, yeah. I think those guys that go out, Chappelle as well, were able to figure out how to navigate it. And they don't complain about what's going on. They just do their work. And for the most part, people love it on both sides. Mm-hmm. So I think that's, interesting.
Yeah, Larry David also proves your point that it isn't the theme that matters. It's the quality of the content, right? He made two shows about nothing, and they're two of the most popular shows in the history of shows.
Yeah.
And neither one of them has a point. There's no point to either one of those shows. It's just quality entertainment.
It's about execution. Yeah. It's never that idea. That's why I say, there's a football show or there's a mafia show. We know how many movies tried to be Goodfellas, and Sopranos was a TV show that was able to, kind of be great also. But most of the mob movies that were made over the 20 years since Goodfellas were pretty bad. Yeah. But execution is the key, and characters are the key. So, and Larry does that brilliantly, and he did it on Seinfeld and pretty much everywhere he goes. So,
yeah. Did you ever get a chance to read a singular script for Curb Your Enthusiasm?
They don't really have them. They have
outlines. I was going to say, yeah.
Now, I wrote one. That's how Entourage happened. Like, I wrote my own script when I had just had a movie come out that didn't make as much money as people decided it should, and I was unemployable. And someone told me to get into TV because I've been doing movies. I said, how do I do that? This is 2002, 2001.
Yeah.
They said, write a spec script for your favorite show. And I wrote a Curb Your Enthusiasm, gave it to, my manager, who was also Mark's manager. And that's where it all started. So,
is it the one where Larry keeps calling the gay dude cunt?
Yeah.
Because that's...
I have nothing to do with anything that was ever on the actual show. I just wrote a script for myself. Larry's never read it, even though I know Larry. I've never told him I wrote it, but my manager liked it.
So you're like, you're writing Star Wars fan fiction at your house? And
yeah, shit, dude. Speaking of which,
there's more fan fiction from Star Wars than Lucasfilms owns. Like, I think about 100 times more content that fans have written than exists in the actual universe.
Yes.
It's hilarious, yeah, man.
And if you want
I'm one of them.
Doug, yeah, dude, if you want to see something that will alter your mind after the show, there is a guy shot a screen test on his own last night. He wants to star
Robin Williams.
Yes, a Robin Williams biopic.
I just saw it. It's unbelievable. Yeah, this guy is basically Robin Williams. It's crazy. And I loved Robin Williams. So it was very good. It's going all over. I got a bunch of people set that to me on my non-blocked Instagram accounts.
Yeah, I woke up to that this morning and same thing. DMs were blowing up with this guy. And I was like, who did this? And then I watched it. It was like 5 minutes and it was shot amazingly, everything else. And the guy is fucking Robin Williams. It was the greatest thing I've ever seen. Hopefully it gets made. But you're right. That's how you got to start. And that's how you got to...
That's why I say, though, what a great time in life that guy is already, with nobody financing him and nobody giving him the green light, we're already talking about it, and so is the whole country. It's amazing.
Yes, I completely agree. And by the way, I sat with Jeff Garland for Curb Your Enthusiasm at a Lakers game in a box. Just by himself, because we had the same agency and all that shit, and they give you tickets. And I asked him about the screenwriting for that, and he goes, dude, you're lucky if it's like 9 pages, because it's just kind of an outline and it's just scribbled down for Curb Your Enthusiasm, which makes it even more impressive.
Absolutely. And Jeff, you know, we had him on the podcast, but Jeff told me when he was on Entourage that I should do radio. And I remember at the time I was like, why? And he just said, you should. And I wish that I listened to him 10 years ago. Because again, whether financially it's rewarding or not, we'll find out. But I love doing this. And I love that guys like you are doing it and having something to say. And we don't have to listen to the same shit over and over. I don't have to turn on Chris Cuomo and Tucker Carlson every day, you know?
I agree. Victory is the podcast. It is out now. It is very entertaining. It is
Hollywood Ways. Check that one out too.
I will check out Hollywood Ways. That one I haven't listened to yet. But Victory, I listen to all the time. And again, you're wildly entertaining, Doug, and congratulations on the new show. Please go out and download it now. For Doug Ellen, D'Anthony Holloway, I'm Ross Patterson. We are the Drinking Bros Podcast. Good night, everyone.